Looking around the internet, I've found a few different recommendations for policy, and I saw an op-ed the other day. I think it was Jonathan Calkins. I might be wrong on that, but he's been a long time researcher and analyst on these cannabis issues, and he's bringing forth this idea about the increased potency that we see in cannabis products these days, and the possible harms that might develop from that, increases in dependence, for example, that he points to. When the Netherlands had an increase in potency, they saw an increase in cannabis dependence. When they ratcheted that down to a 15% limit, they saw a decrease in cannabis dependence problems. So he's actually suggesting something similar to what we see in alcohol, where, you know, in the alcohol industry, they sometimes tax by proof. You know, the higher proof liquors have a higher tax than just beer or wine. What would you think of a proposal to be setting potency limits or taxing cannabis products by potency, good or bad, you know, unintended consequences? What do you think of that idea?
Well, my preference would be that we avoid getting into that and that we allow the market to mature a bit. Right now, you know, we're not really sure what the consumers want. We know, for example, that there's a great deal more demand for edibles than anyone ever anticipated when the first couple of states were planning to legalize marijuana. And we know generally people tend to want fairly strong, good, high-quality marijuana. Now, in some ways, I do think it's like a beer or wine versus hard liquor. Most of us have learned, once we're old enough to drink alcohol, that you don't drink as much hard liquor as you might wine or you might beer. And I think that marijuana consumers need to begin to develop that same nuanced sophistication. If, in fact, you're smoking something that's 15% or even 20 or 25% THC, then obviously you shouldn't be smoking as much as you would have if you were smoking 10% THC. But it's, the market is new enough that for most consumers right now, I think we tend to go in, if we're in a state where we have the luxury of a retail outlet, we go into the store and say, what's the best thing you have? When by that we generally mean, what's the strongest thing you have? I think we will get past that. I think we'll begin to find those areas where we're most comfortable, where we enjoy the quality of the high. And it's not the goal for most of us for getting high is not to be so stoned that you can't get off the sofa. It's to feel light, to enjoy, enhance your appetite, improve your sex life. There's all kinds of benefits from a nice high, but it shouldn't be totally debilitating. And indeed, if you insist on smoking the strongest possible marijuana, then you've got to be especially careful that you don't drive for a few hours. With more ordinary marijuana, if you wait 60 to 90 minutes after you've last smoked, you're generally not going to be impaired. That doesn't mean there isn't some risk if you got pulled over that because you had THC in your system. In many states, most states, you could still be charged with a DUID, even though they didn't demonstrate any impairment. But again, I'm not talking about the legal risk. I'm talking about the real risk. We don't want our own people driving on the highways and putting themselves and other people in danger simply because they underestimated the strength of their marijuana. So I think we need to make sure that the marijuana labeling is in fact accurate, that we know there's no molds or dangerous pesticides, and that we make sure we know the level of the THC and the CBD and that it's accurate, that it's been tested in a state certified laboratory. If we have good information, then I don't think we necessarily need to impose a two or three tier tax system. Now, if that's what it takes to convince a state legislature to allow stronger marijuana, then okay, I could live with that. I'd rather have the choice of the different strengths of marijuana, even if I had to accept a different tax rate.
Yeah, it seems to me that banning higher potency marijuana or charging more for it is a weed dealer's wet dream. That sounds to just fuel the black market.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, if you're not careful, what you do is you just send people back to the black market.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's, and by the way, on that, when we talked about that earlier, our opponents like to say, well, even in states like Colorado, you know, you still have a black market. Well, there will always be a small black market. For Christ's sake, there's a black market for cigarettes in many states because of the high taxes on cigarettes in New York, for example. A pack of cigarettes is, I don't know, $11 or $14 or something. Well, you can buy them down here in Virginia where I live for, I don't know, $4 or $5. So you can imagine there are people who are smuggling cigarettes from the low-tax state to the high-tax states, even today. But that's only a real sliver of the market. Almost all tobacco is sold through legal channels, and I think the same thing will be true with marijuana. Our realistic goal should not be that there will never be any illegal marijuana sold in the state. That's just not realistic. But as long as we have the vast majority that's above ground and in a safe and regulated manner, we've achieved the result we're after.
You know, I think this brings up where two of our ideas kind of come at loggerheads when we're dealing with not just our opponents, but the states where we want to pass these laws. And on one hand, we're saying we want to pass marijuana legalization because you can tax it and you can get all this tax money for the state and do this great stuff with the tax money. But then on the other hand, we're saying we want to legalize to help eliminate a black market or reduce a black market. Well, obviously, the lower the tax is, the more black market you eliminate. But the lower the tax is, the less filthy money revenue the state gets. So how do we reconcile? Where do we find that sweet spot?
Well, I think you're right. That's what we have to look for, is that sweet spot where you partially satisfy both of those demands. I'll be honest. I don't think that the lure of new revenue is yet the major motivation for a state legislature to act. Now, once you have a majority of the legislature that have come to their realization that legalizing and taxing marijuana makes more sense over prohibition, then of course we begin to discuss, okay, what's a realistic level of tax that this state this size might anticipate? And do we want to earmark that for particular things? Like in Colorado, I think the first $40 million goes towards schools and teachers. And that is very appealing, you know, politically, to be able to argue those things. But again, I think it's the real motivation for ending prohibition and substituting legalization is, number one, we stop treating responsible marijuana smokers as criminals. And number two, we have a market that's safe and regulated where the consumers have a right to know they're smoking a safe substance. And it's only incidentally about the tax. It's really about what's a fair system. You know, ultimately, the goal at Normal is we want responsible marijuana smokers to be treated fairly in all aspects of their lives. So it's not just that we want to be able to run down the street at a handy store and buy our marijuana. We also want to make sure that we don't suffer job discrimination, that we shouldn't be fired from our job simply because we have THC in our system. Of course, if they find that we're impaired on the job, then they have a right to fire us. But if we smoke on the weekend and then come into work on Monday, we're not impaired, and they should not be firing responsible marijuana smokers. But they are through most of the country today. Same thing with child custody, where they presume if you're a parent of a young child and you smoke marijuana, they sort of presume you're probably an unfit parent, and you have to prove the contrary. And of course, with DUID, it's the same thing. We don't want marijuana smokers driving when they're impaired, but neither do we want marijuana smokers treated as if they're guilty of a DUI without any evidence that they drove while they were impaired. So we've got a lot of consumer fine points that still have to be resolved before we have this whole legalization thing worked out. But it surely is nice to be at a place where we can begin to deal with these. Back when prohibition was still in effect, if you would have said to a state legislator or a federal legislator, we want to make sure the marijuana is tested in a laboratory and properly and accurately labeled, they would have laughed you out of their office because it was contraband. So of course you couldn't make those demands. Today, in states where they have begun to legalize, we absolutely can make those requirements.
And the states are making some progress on this. As of January 1st, Maine became the first state to protect employment rights through their initiative. It went into effect January 1st, and you can't get fired or not hired because of marijuana metabolites. So that's some good news on that front. Let's take a look, move from the state angle now and get to the federal angle on this, because, of course, we've got a less than friendly administration when it comes to marijuana reform. We've got Jeff Sessions, an ardent drug warrior who pines for the Nancy Reagan Just Say No 1980s. And as I've been following this, on this story, of course, the concrete action he's taken is in the rescinding of the Cole memo and other supporting memos like Ogden and Wilkinson that provided some veneer of protection for the legal states. But I'm also seeing a rhetorical shift in that, well, I guess it's two main things that I keep hearing from people like Jeff Sessions, Pete Sessions, who else was just recently saying this, Grady Judd, the sheriff that spoke the other day. And, and it's two things that I think they're trying to tie marijuana to the opioid crisis. One is where they say marijuana is the gateway drug. It leads to addiction. And then the other one is where they say the there's fentanyl-laced marijuana out there, which has never been proven. Are you worried about the federal response? Are you worried there's going to be a federal response, any sort of crackdown in the states?
Oh, I'm absolutely worried, so long as Jeff Sessions is the attorney general. And by the way, the other day, there was some rumor I read, I think it was in the Washington Post, that if Trump decided to get rid of Sessions, he would probably go back to Chris Christie, for Christ's sake. You know, those are the two biggest reefer maniacs in the entire country. So, yes, I am indeed worried. I think that we are far enough along in terms of the change in attitudes that have occurred in this country. You know, we've got 5-6 surveys now that show 60% and higher public support for full legalization, not just medical use. So although it worries me that a Jeff Sessions might not care about public attitudes, he might just figure he can go in and shut down an industry and you know, destroy a lot of businesses and basically throw a monkey wrench into any state's legalization system. He can't require the state to recriminalize marijuana, and they're not going to do that. So he can't get what he wants, is to go back to the old drug war. But if in fact they want to, they can certainly, as I say, throw a monkey wrench into the system, and they could set a state back for 2 or 3 years until we get rid of Trump and then get back on track again. I'm also, it makes me nervous when this whole opioid thing, because what Jeff Sessions said just in the past week was, he was giving a lecture someplace where when they asked him about opioids, he suggested people should just bear a little pain and take an aspirin. Yeah. I mean, this man is a goddamn idiot. You know, it's incredible he would say that. And so the idea that what we think he should be doing would be legalizing marijuana, because we know that in states that have medical marijuana available, you have like a 30% decline in opioid deaths and by a 25% decline in opioid addiction. So we think legalizing marijuana is one of the answers to the opioid crisis. But of course, Jeff Sessions is never going to acknowledge that. He goes the other way and suggests that everybody starts with marijuana. That's where they begin to get into the drug scene, and they like to throw it all together. You know, I've been smoking marijuana for, I guess, 55 years or something. I think that's right now. And I've never even seen heroin. I don't know what it looks like. I mean, I read about it and I see pictures on the news. I've just never even been around the damn substance. And as I say, I've been smoking for more than half a century. So we need to get rid of these old ideas, but we're not likely to do that as long as Trump is in the White House.
Well, Keith, it's always wonderful speaking with you, and we, of course, thank you for everything you've done in founding Normal and fighting for the good fight for these past 45 years. As I let you go, though, one last question, and it just has to do with the direction we're headed, because one concern I have and some other people that I've spoken with have is kind of a, and maybe it's inevitable, but this change of marijuana going from being outlaw status to being a regular consumer good, and how that might affect our culture or our harmony, if you will. Back in the day when everybody was illegal, everybody shared the same joint in the same circle, whether you were black, white, straight, gay, rich, poor, you know, y'all gathered in the circle. Where now I'm seeing, you know, yuppie types with their vapor pens and the young kids with their dab rigs, and it just seems we've lost a communal aspect to this. And I don't know, what are your thoughts on the changing culture of cannabis as we move from prohibition to legalization?
Well, like you, I wish that we could retain all of the old sense of community. You know, one thing about prohibition, because if you were going to smoke, you had to trust everyone you smoked with, because, you know, what do you know? You don't know who's a narc, who's going to rat you out or whatever. So if you would go to a party and somebody would pass a joint around, all of you who shared that joint became part of a community. You had a common interest.
Or really so, part of a conspiracy, if you phrase it right.
Yeah, that's right. From their standpoint, it was a conspiracy. From ours, they were helping us forge a community. And I always found that wonderfully supportive and invigorating. And I, too, would like to see as much of that to continue as possible. But I'm realistic enough to know that there will be a good bit of that cultural affectation we're bound to lose, because a lot of the newer people getting into it are only into it either for the money, you know, they're jumping into the industry even if they don't smoke because they think they can make a lot of money, or for them, they never really lived through prohibition when they had to worry about being busted or thrown out of school or thrown into jail. So for them, it's just sort of it's another choice. It's like you want to go to a movie tonight, or you want to go down and use the rig and do some dabs, or, you know, I don't think to them it has much to do with their general value system, where for us, it always has. Now, again, for a lot of us, marijuana legalization really means personal freedom more than anything else. I don't think the government has any business coming into our house to know what books we read, what music we listen to, how we conduct ourselves in the privacy of the bedroom, or whether we smoke marijuana or drink alcohol when we relax. It's simply none of their business. So for me, legalization is more about personal freedom, even though I'm a devoted marijuana smoker.
Mm. Yeah, and me too, Keith. We might just be some of the old OGs going off into the sunset on this one, considering that an adult who's now 21 buying their first legal joint in California has never not known medical marijuana in that state. It's existed whole life, so it's bound to change, I'm sure. Keith, thanks so much for everything you do, and we'll talk to you again soon sometime, and good luck on everything you're up to.
Good luck with your 420 Airbnb, too, Russ.
Come by and visit sometime.
I'd love to. Bye-bye.
Bye.